I hereby introduce to you Mr. Michael Veazey.
Hey, 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 welcome to Amazing FBA, the place to be for UK-based Amazon entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Michael Veazey. Welcome to the show. Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the show. And they say you are judged by the company you keep. Well, these days, I'm lucky enough to keep the company of some amazing Amazon entrepreneurs, some of whom are fast becoming close friends. And one of those people is Danny McMillan. Danny's been on the podcast before to talk about pay-per-click and Amazon ads. If you haven't caught that, then check the show notes. I'll put a link into that where he gave us a very good way to start off, very straightforward way to start off with Amazon ads with auto campaigns, basically, which is a hugely important area, but many people get confused. There's another very important area, which is much more for advanced sellers or those who aspire to be advanced, but that is the Canton Fair. And Danny's been out there, and like everything Danny does, he does it with thoroughness in his preparation. Then he goes and does reality, which sometimes differs greatly from the preparation. And then he compares the two and comes up with a sort of tried and tested formula. And that's exactly what Danny's done for us with the Canton Fair. With no more ado, I'm going to hand back over to a fast friend of the podcast and a great all-round guy, Danny McMillan. So the Canton Fair, so obviously we talked about the big advantages, and I'm getting sold more and more. And there's obviously a resistance to the idea of going abroad and all the hassle and, you know, effort and money, apart from anything else that entails. So many advantages. What would you say the big mistakes that people make if they're attending the fair the first time? You mentioned that you made a few ones. What are the big ones to avoid?
The big ones is when people don't plan at all and they turn up and they have no idea, and then they get lost. And they get lost and they lose their time, and you can't get that time back. Because once the phase is gone, the phase is gone. So you can't overplan, but you can't just wander in there and hope for the best. You need to have some sort of navigation process. An example, you know, there's two stations around the fair itself. You know, you'll look at which phase you need to enter as the first one. And then you're going to go, well, my category is in zone X. Well, the nearest station to zone X is this station. So they'll go, we'll go here on that day and we'll eat on that floor. And basically, you just bought yourself 2 or 3 hours away from time wasting. And that only takes 10 minutes. But a lot of people fail to do that. The second thing is people fail to network. So they go there in isolation. And networking with people is, one, it gives you a lot of energy. Two, it creates a great experience because a lot of Amazon sellers are really nice people. Three, you get invited to WeChat groups, and it's your on-demand Siri for the Canton Fair because people are willing to help each other. So if you're stuck for a translation, or you've got a problem, or there's a question, and you know you need to get to X and you don't know where you are, there's always people in these groups who will help. And so networking is very important. Again, the poor choice of footwear is another one.
Right.
And sometimes new people to the fair may go and discuss pricing at the fair and either close the deal or get to that stage where they're documenting the discussed price. And the chances are, as they're paying a premium for the stand there, your problem you're going to have is that you're going to be charged a premium on your unit price as well. So it's going to be hard to get that number down when you get home. So be careful with that.
So basically, don't discuss pricing. You presumably need to discuss pricing to a degree to see whether it's in the right ballpark.
I mean, you could throw it out there and you say, can you give me a guidance on price for 5,000 units, knowing that your initial order is going to be a 500 to 1,000, yeah?
Yeah.
But what you then do is you can work out backwards from that as it increases by increasing in percentage. Of course, you want to know you want to be in the ballpark, but I would say, you know, sure, get a bit of guidance on price, but don't sound like you're agreeable to the price. Does that make sense?
Yeah, just kind of look very neutral about the price when you get it.
And when they get back, they'll go, well, I gave them that price. So if they go, can we do it for this? They'll come down 5%, but they're still playing with the other 25. They've put the premium on. But 3 weeks or 4 weeks after they've been to the Canton Fair, they may not have had the exhilarating time that they needed. So you may be able to negotiate better prices with them, because what they're interested in doing is recouping their costs from the fair.
Okay, so the best time to start negotiating with something, unless it looks like it's insanely popular, but even that could be, I guess, an illusion, is basically, what, 2, 3, 4 weeks after the fair rather than just after?
I mean, you can negotiate when you come back. What I was trying to give an example of is that if you imagine they've paid the amount of money for a stand, yeah, and the initial reaction might be really good, but they've laid out all this money and they've got an idea of their pricing. 3 weeks after they get back, they might go, well, we didn't really cover our costs at the fair. Maybe we should drop our pricing. And that's where you can catch them there. Because believe it or not, if you found, like we found about 50 products that we like, it took 3 weeks to boil them down before we could really start having that conversation. If you've gone there and seen two things you like, fair enough. I mean, you could do that as soon as you get home. But when you've got to summarize all the images, all the business cards, put them into spreadsheets, look at where the, like for the competition, keyword research, all of that stuff needs to be done if you're doing these things properly, and it all takes time. So be aware that there's a lot of after service to take care of.
Yeah. So what are the things you've already mentioned, putting things in spreadsheets, keyword research, competition? What are the main other things that you'd have to do post fair?
Post fair. One of the things I like to do retrospectively now is where I made the mistake. We had a good system going, me and my business partner. He would take pictures of the stand and the product and the business card resting on the catalogue, because we didn't want to pick up the catalogues and weigh ourselves down. So we asked for an e-catalogue or an e-brochure, right? And then we had pictures done together with the people on the stand to humanize it. So when you contact them, they go, oh yeah, it was that guy or that person we spoke to. So that worked well. The problem was is that on your camera, they're not all being linked together. So I'm going to use the, what's that program that you use? The Evernote, yeah?
Evernote, yeah, it's very good.
Next time, I'm going to do everything on Evernote. And because we take a mobile Wi-Fi device with us, we add that on all day in the rucksack. And what we could do is we can piece the images and our notes all together. So it stops all that consolidation and indexing process when you get back. Because it only takes a few minutes. But if you imagine all the people that you see, by the time you get back, you don't remember every conversation. And so you're putting what's on your phone, downloading it, and then you're taking pictures of the business card, then you're putting it in the folder, and then you're requesting the brochure. Does that make sense?
So you're really systematizing really sort of small things, but there's just lots and lots of them.
Yes.
So you just need to be systematic at the beginning to avoid a headache when you get back.
Exactly. And you can only learn that by doing.
Absolutely. But you've, as you said, you've been out there on the edge testing for us, so we don't have to go through the same pains that you did. So what are the other mistakes that people make attending the fair? Obviously, you just flagged up another one, which is kind of not having connections made up front clearly in some form, like Evernote, whatever, between photos. What are the other big things?
The other thing is, which was our biggest mistake, was we done it ghetto fabulous and we stayed in Airbnbs. And what we should have done was to stay in hotels. And the reason that is because in a hotel, there's the opportunity of there's no language barrier and they can communicate with taxis for you. They can point you in the right direction to the metro or the train station. I think they're MTR over in China. Obviously, all levels of communication can be done with inside of the hotel. When you stay in an Airbnb like we did, and we stayed in the suburbs, not a single person spoke English. And it was awful to get around. To give you an example, the first day going to the Canton Fair, the Sunday, well, just after we've flown in and got jet lag and everything else, it took us over 2 hours to get a cab. In the end, we managed to snag a bit of Wi-Fi signal. And then I messaged WhatsApp my host, and he gave me the Chinese translation so I can point it through the window of a cab driver, because even they didn't know what the Canton Fair was in terms of the translation. So one of the biggest things over there is stay in good hotels, pay that on the premium. If you're going to cut corners, you know, book a cheaper flight, but get a decent hotel which is near the venues, that you know has a shuttle on hand and has cab services as well. That was one of our biggest mistakes, which affects the quality of your visit, you know?
Yeah. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. So yeah, there's a couple of really, really important things. First of all, to be aware that the majority of people outside of, you know, specific things to tourism or business, even in Canton, don't speak English, which is really unearth knowing. And I just wouldn't know either way. And the other one is just stick with the hotels. And also you've touched on Wi-Fi and internet. Tell me about that, because I understand that it can be a tricky business in China generally. How do you deal with that whole thing?
Okay, you have to split it into two. Let's talk about all the little tools that I would suggest using to make your trip easier. Now, we had to communicate to back home, because not only we have our Amazon businesses, we have our other businesses here as well. And so being in contact was very important. So one of the key things that you need is a very good VPN. We use ExpressVPN, and we put that on our devices before we left.
And what is a VPN?
It's a network for, is it a virtual private network, I think it stands for, which means it is, for instance, in China, it blocks things like Google and Facebook and certain other things. And so you use a VPN that hides where you are and who you are, as I understand it, on a technical level.
Yeah.
And it, like, for instance, we can choose a server that's in, I don't know, America, so that when we're dialing out onto the internet and we want to access Google or Facebook, we're not going via China, if you like, which is put on block. I don't know a huge amount about the culture and why that is. I know it was a communist, or still is a communist country, and so there are restrictions over there. So you need to have a good working VPN. Often the free ones can fall by the wayside. So what we did is we use ExpressVPN, and I think it was on a 30-day trial. So you don't have to necessarily pay for it up front. So first things first is the VPN. The second thing is the networks in China and for your SIMs, for your phones, are different. Yeah. So you have to buy one in Hong Kong and one in China. Now, I was using a mixture in China because the boosters for, say, 100 meg were costing me £10 a day through my network here in the UK.
Right.
In Hong Kong, they wanted to charge me £50 for £10 boosters. So what we did, we took some, because we're both on iPhones, we took some Android devices, and then we were going to use those. But it transpires that we could use our phone, our own iPhones. And what we did, we took our Wi-Fi device that we had, put the SIM into that, and used our iPhones whilst we were there. But it's important that when you get there, you're not going to have these to hand. So you need to have a bit of pre-planning in place so that you're covered. Like, for instance, another thing that we didn't know was that we couldn't use our credit cards to change up money. So we didn't take any money with us.
Right.
You can get them from cash points out there, but everywhere we looked outside of major hotels, you could only use cash to change up into the currency, which is crazy because obviously you haven't got the cash to start with if you didn't take it with you. So
yeah,
another tip there. So without going off on a tangent too much, if we stick to the app. So get yourself a VPN, work out a plan on in terms of taking some cash with you to cover your cabs at the beginning, like enough to get you from the airport to your hotel, and then you can take care of things from there. I'd also, before you go, download Jetlag Rooster. So you can program that up, that app, get Evernote. I would also add WhatsApp and WeChat before you go, get them installed. And then get a Hong Kong app for the trains there, because they're getting around Hong Kong. If you attend in the Global Sources Fair, you won't have to pay for the public transport because you can show them your pass and get a free metro. I think it's called Metro or MTR. I always get mixed up. In China, you can get a Guangzhou Metro app as well. So I think I covered everything there. So you've got Hong Kong app, a Guangzhou Metro app, a Jetlag app, Evernote for documentation, WhatsApp and WeChat for your networking and hanging out with groups, and your VPN.
Wow. So there's quite a lot of sort of tech and communications technology preparation to go. So I'll go through that with you, Damien, and we'll get Precision's show notes for people so that they know about that stuff.
Well, it's all in the article as well. If you break it down, there's a section I've done on phone apps and VPN and stuff like that. If we put that in the show notes, it will cover a lot of this anyway.
Fantastic. Well, okay, we'll make sure that we put the links to the article in the show notes, of course. So obviously you learnt a huge amount from, you know, your mistakes as well as the stuff that worked for you from this visit. And you've written your really in-depth article, which obviously I need to reread because it was a while ago I read it. So obviously I didn't take in all the things about VPNs and things, partly because maybe I didn't quite understand. So thanks for explaining all that. So what would you change now on your return visit? I presume we're going, October, the next Canton Fair?
Yes, I'm going to go back in October. And I'm going to take from what I learned, and this is not necessarily going to be for everyone, but from my own personal visit, my plan is I'm going to go straight into Hong Kong. We had nightmares with the trains going from country to country. So I want to consolidate the trip and be more focused now we know what we're looking for and we understand how the ground lies. So we'll go straight into Hong Kong. I'll do my presentation there is the goal. And then I'll do 2 days at the shows. And then I'm planning to get a train across to China to go to Shenzhen, which is just over, like Guangzhou is a bit further out, so it's about 2 hours on the train, whereas Shenzhen's just over the border. So we're going to go and do some niche fairs there. And I may skip Canton this time, or might do 2 days. We're not sure yet. But if we do skip it, we'll go to what's called the Uri markets. I think that's the right pronunciation. And so that's about a 2-hour flight. And so not a lot of people in our world would necessarily go there. I think a lot of the top sellers have gone from Canton to the Uri markets. Now, we'd have to take a sourcing agent with us or a translator, because you need to make sure you get a good demand on the high quality stuff. So we plan to do a few days there. Now, the Uri markets are open all year round, and I think they've got 5 districts. So they cover like the product verticals, much like Canton does. And then on the way back, we'll stop off, because we'll take the flight Turkish Airlines and stop off in Turkey and maybe drop into a couple of markets there. So then in that way, we're optimizing our trip slightly differently by going to more niche events, again, trying to expand on that distance between the competition, if that makes sense.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So when everyone starts going to Canton, you're going to go to Uri. So obviously that could be outside the scope of this interview, which we're focusing on Canton, but just tell us briefly more about Uri. So it's open all year round. Is it like a sort of year-long Canton fair?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, it's more market-based. The quality there, as I understand, I've not been there personally, but the quality is you need to dig a bit deeper to get higher quality. You're going to struggle on your own, so you take a translator or a sourcing agent with you who's able to communicate. I think what you'll find is if you go there, you can get the MOQs, you know, your minimum order quantities can be quite a lot less. I know people that are picking up in groups of 50s and 100s. So it might be an idea for someone starting out. They might not go to, say, Canton. They might decide to go to the Uri markets, but take a translator with them. Yeah, does that make sense?
It does. So presumably then, we didn't even touch on translators, so much to think about, but you didn't take a translator to Canton then? They all speak English, or how did that work?
No, but here's another tip for you. My current factory, the suppliers, they had a stand at Canton. And my rep, who I work with closely on our products, she took a 30-hour journey across China by train to help out at phase 2 and walk around with me and Steve, my business partner, to help communicate with some of the other stands. And also she brought a load of samples with her, which we're now moving forward with 2 of those as part of our product range.
Wow, these guys go to some trouble, don't they, I have to say.
They do.
They aren't just like your typical Western, oh, I have to finish at 5 o'clock tonight. They're just whatever it takes, really.
Yeah, they're amazing people. The Chinese are amazing people, and they've got, you know, in terms of culture, they're very honourable, the people that I've met, and so we've created good friends. I'm saying this as if you're going to the Canton Fair, if you've got a good relationship with your current factory, it pays to speak to them, because sometimes, like, they try to help us out on the train tickets and try to pre-book them and things like that, and helped us with a hotel on the final day because we didn't want to stay at our Airbnb in case we missed the cab getting a flight home. So that communication was done to get a hotel reserved on the final evening, you know. So there is a big advantage by communicating with your supplier stroke factory, and they can help you book in your visit as well. But obviously don't take liberties with it. It's just, yeah, it's a good opportunity.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Wow. So really your return visit, if I understand, is really quite different. And that's because you know more precisely what you're looking for, and you're avoiding the hassles of going between China and Hong Kong. You're just going to go to Hong Kong, go straight to China, to the place which you think you can get the best deals for your particular product line. And that's it. Go home. Oh, well, pop into Turkey on the way back.
Yeah. So you fly in via Hong Kong, you do a few days, you get a train that doesn't take you long to get across the border to Shenzhen. Yeah. So you're cutting travel time.
Yeah.
You do Shenzhen, like a fare there, a couple of days, and then you get on a flight for 2 hours to go to the Uri markets, and then do a couple of days there and then get a flight home. Whereas when we travel between China and Hong Kong, although the train journey itself is only 2 hours, it still takes 6-7 hours by the time you're preparing, you leave where you're staying, you get a cab, you get there, you pick up the connection, you queue, you wait, you buy your ticket, you go across, you get a cab at the other end, you settle. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so it takes out 6 hours, yeah. So mostly of a day, really, the working part of a day.
And we zigzagged as well. we were back and forth. You think we were in China for a day, then we went, got on the train to Hong Kong. Then a few days later, we're back in China. Then we go right down to the Shenzhen border to meet a factory. Then we come all the way back to Guangzhou and then get a plane home, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So really, so planning the logistics of it's just like planning the logistics of the supply chain for your product. And obviously you have more options. So you've got enough rope to hang yourself, haven't you? I guess with the products going from your factory to wherever it's going, your home, FBA inspection, straight to Amazon warehouse, whatever. But yeah, in a way, it's the same thing, isn't it? It's planning your own physical route around China as efficiently as you can.
Yes, that's right.
I mean, it makes a lot of sense on paper. It's just like, you know, it's one thing to sit here in my house at home and say it, but you've actually been and done it. So you've got the scars on your feet to prove that is really important. So we can learn from those scars and not get our own, I guess. So Danny, obviously some fantastic information and some, you know, real life experience that can save us all a lot of hassle. And I mean, we can get a lot more out of the experience. How can people contact more from you or book you for speaking gigs and that sort of thing?
You can reach me via dannymcmillan.com. You can contact me on there, and I also have free downloads for spreadsheets, and it keeps up to date with my features and guest appearances and stuff like that. So I try and give as much value back as possible. So if you go to dannymcmillan.com, which is dannymcmillan.com.
Great. So people can contact you there for any speaking engagements or any other sort of consulting, that sort of thing.
That's right. And with regards to the monthly event that we do for Amazon sellers, obviously go to meetup.com and do a search for Amazon sellers.
Great. Well, that's nice and clear. Danny, as ever, it's great fun talking to you and masses and massive information. As you say, you are a person that likes to crunch into life, but then go and, you know, analyze it to the nth degree and optimize things. You're all about optimizing life. So as ever, impressive, helpful, you know, and all the things we'd want. So thanks so much. And can we get you back on again if we've got any questions come up from people about the Canton Fair?
Yes, of course. Yeah, of course.
Fantastic. Well, so at the moment, I suspect from the listeners I've got, mostly, you know, at the beginning stages, there won't be that many people going to Canton, but it's one of those things that's the word is beginning to spread about how valuable it is. So I suspect we're going to get a few people coming out of the woodwork. So we'll get in touch and we'll do a follow up. We'd love to do a follow up after your October experience, if nothing else.
Yes, that'd be great. Thank you.
Amazing. Thank you, Danny, as ever.
So, ladies and gentlemen, you heard it here first. Danny McMillan, the man himself, the man, the legend. But joking apart, he is a great guy. And what I really like about Danny is he's really humble. He's really straight up. He's terribly British in that way. And one contrast between, for example, Danny and quite a lot of people that I know of, the big American sellers now that do know their stuff, to be fair, but they're taking people to Canton or Yuri markets, whatever. They're charging $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 to take people on a big trip. And yeah, that I'm sure that you get a lot of value from being part of that. There's no question that if you pay a lot of money and you get to hang around with really powerful people, that is an amazing thing. Sooner or later, most of us will pay that kind of money because it is worth it to us. But what Danny's done is allow the little guy, if you like, and I would include myself in that really. I'm no massive mega million seller yet, but that enables us to go there with quite a lot of the information that the guru types are keeping for themselves or are charging a hell of a lot of money for. So Danny is an example of really the sort of quality of guests that I've been able to get on the podcast in the last few months. And that's really down to me being part of a mastermind. It's not a really guru-led, massively expensive one, I hasten to say, nor am I trying to sell places in it. It's private. It's not available. But it is an example of the fact that you need to get a peer group, guys, sooner or later. It's not about people who are millions of miles ahead of you, nor is it about people who are obviously miles behind you. But it needs to be people around about the same level as you, maybe the next level up, but not like millions of levels up. So I will hang around with people who are doing anywhere between, say, 15,000, 25,000 a month in turnover, who are on track for that, or up to, say, 250,000 or whatever. But I don't hang around with people who are doing 5 million a month because they have different issues and different problems to solve than I have. So that wouldn't make sense. So just another example of hanging around with great people, really you end up picking up a ton of value, which otherwise you're going to have to pay some guru type a hell of a lot of money. Now, there are some paid masterminds out there. There are some free things. All I can say from trying to do things for free off my own bat in the past, if it's just a Skype-only call type group, and I've said this before, I'll say it again, it doesn't really tend to keep going. You've got to have a face-to-face element. You can do that yourself, and if you can be bothered to organize it and get all the people together and filter it, and it's a lot of work, but you know, it is worth doing yourself. Or sometimes if you haven't got the time to waste on that, it can be worth paying to be part of a paid mastermind and, you know, just turn up, do the networking, get to know people, and then push off, you know. So you pay some money and you take some choice, in this case quite literally, but I really would urge anyone to be part of as exclusive a club as you can. And just like the Canton Fair, it's just the differentiator that shows, you know, if you make an effort to physically travel somewhere, and obviously China's a hell of a long way and your China's suppliers will take you a lot more seriously, but in the meantime, if you make the effort to travel to central London or wherever it is, just make the effort to physically get to a meeting and meet with like-minded people. It makes all the difference, really. But there's no point really in going to one of these massive guru-led events if it's like 60, 100, 500 people, whatever it is. That's great fun. That's great networking. And I do that myself. But as I said before, you know, I really believe that you need a little sort of team of people. Talking of building a team, I am currently on the way to building my team of VAs. I've got Daniel, my lovely guy over in America, who's edited this podcast and created the show notes so I can get on with focusing on my business. And I've just got back from a lovely lady in Eastern Europe, a list of suppliers in Europe. So there's a load. There's a lot to talk about there. Suppliers in Europe, yes, folks, not just China. It's not the only place in the world you can source. It's a new experiment. I'll keep you posted about that. And then I've got an Indian VA just about to start doing some sourcing work for me, looking at India as well. So it's all happening here, guys. I will also do the Danny thing and report from the edge about that and let you know. But let me tell you that having somebody working while you're relaxing or sleeping is the best feeling in the world. I really wish I got on with it earlier. We'll talk about outsourcing as a whole other topic, something I'm very, very passionate about at the moment. But in the meantime, guys, get on with your business and go check the show notes for the Canton Fair thing and start planning, start thinking about it, start seeing if you can budget for it. So I'm certainly somewhere I'm going to look seriously into going as well. So all happening here. Don't forget as ever to join the Facebook group if you're not a member of that yet. It's www.amazingfba.com/FB, F as in face, B as in book. And we've got about 380 members now. So you'll notice each podcast, it seems to be, I hadn't even been tracking it properly, really. I'm just letting it happen organically. But it seems to be about 10 people between each podcast tend to sort of join up. So now's a great time to join. It's quite a smallish community, but very active. I've noticed quite a few podcasts of similar size. There's not much going on, really. There's not many questions getting asked. Other places are huge and there's masses of activity. But, you know, once you've got several thousand people in there, it gets a bit overwhelming. So I think it's quite a nice size. Got people like Danny McMillan come in and answer some questions, which is great. My friend Rob Sleeth, who's somebody I must get on the podcast, actually very techie, very knowledgeable guy. He's always in there answering questions. Manuel Beckvar's in there occasionally as well. Peter Zapf of Global Sources, who knows absolutely loads. As you'll know, if you heard his interview, if you missed that, then go listen to that. So some great people coming in there and giving you really expert advice, not just kind of a few people at the same level as you, but it's quite a few experts knocking around, but also people who've encounter the same problems and come up with solutions. So great place to be. Do go and check it out, guys. That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. I really appreciate it. Now over to you. First, 80-20 everything. Learn the critical few. Maybe there's one thing in this podcast that can make all the difference. Find that thing. 20% of inputs, give 80% of the outputs. Which are the critical few for you? Then take action. Imperfect action beats perfect inaction every single time. Finally, and not least, review. If you've made mistakes, learn from them. If you've made a success, duplicate it. You can't do that unless you look back. So in summary, learn the critical few. Then do, then review. And then, my friend, it's up to you. That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. Speak to you in the next episode.